This News Talk 1010 podcast is brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Good morning, I'm Jerry Yeager. This is News Talk 1010. Now, not very many days ago, I talked about human trafficking and how much a problem it is in Canada. Never mind what you think might be going on in underdeveloped countries around the world or in just other countries in the world. It's happening right here in the GTA and maybe on your block. And I want to follow up with this because there is some worry that actually the pandemic has made the problem even worse, and we'll get into that and why that might be. But joining me again to talk about this, Rinelle Bruder of Project I Rise, which is a nonprofit organization committed to educating and empowering at-risk youth and survivors of human trafficking. Rinelle, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Jerry.
And Tamara Cherry, former broadcaster, Pickup Communications, and author of All the Bumpy Pebbles, a fiction book that follows a fictional but based on some real-life stories of a young girl who is forced into essentially sexual slavery. Is that fair to say,
yep.
Tamara?
Yep. Absolutely. Exactly.
All right. Rinelle, I want to start with you. Do you think it is true, is there evidence to show that human trafficking has gotten worse in Canada, specifically in the GTA, due to the pandemic? And if so, why?
So as far as statistics, I don't know if we have anything to actually prove in that way that it's gotten worse. But as far as my work, and I think those involved in the anti-trafficking movement, we do recognize that there is an increase. And I would say the main reason is just the children are online. And so the fact that children, all their schooling, their social life has been put online because of obviously the pandemic, they're now more at risk to engaging with predators. So historically, traffickers, predators, they would go to places to look for vulnerable children. So they would go to, you know, the Greyhound bus stop, or they would go in front of these youth shelters. But now, all they have to do is go online. They can access a young child via social media. So on TikTok, on Snapchat. And young people tend to overshare. So they're sharing a lot of information about their personal life. They're sharing their vulnerabilities. And this is really what traffickers are looking for, to sort of make that connection and begin to build the trust.
I want to clear something up from the last time you were on, which was not that long ago, both of you. And we talked about girls as young as 11 or 12 being trafficked for sex. And people were writing in, well, where are the parents? What's going on with the parents? And I want to clear up here, Rinelle, that we're not talking about kids who've left home.
No, so we're talking, I mean, still homeless youth in the shelter system are disproportionately vulnerable to trafficking, but more and more we're seeing young people who are from stable homes. We're seeing young people who come from two-family homes who are being exploited and being trafficked while they're still living at home. So they're meeting somebody online and they're engaging in an online relationship with this person who might be asking them to send them nude photos, asking them to be involved in pornography. And when they have the opportunity to meet them in person, this young person could be exploited, could be trafficked and forced into sexual slavery.
Tamara, do you find it hard to believe that parents wouldn't know? Do we blame parents? Do we blame kids? Or do we just blame the people who are victimizing naive young kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when it comes to blame, I would place the blame on the exploiters, the abusers, the traffickers, as well as the men, by and large, who are, you know, trolling the internet looking for young girls. I've done a lot of stories as a reporter about Johns that were arrested after an undercover sting with a cop, after thinking they were talking to a 14-year-old girl arranging to pay them for sex. When it comes to parents, though, I don't want to pass blame onto the parents, but I really do think that we're in a moment right now where parents can be educated about this. And once they realize what's going on and how it can affect anybody's kid, really, maybe they'll pay closer attention to who their kids are talking to on social media, who they're hanging out with outside of the home. We talked about, you know, or Rinelle was speaking about girls that are being trafficked, essentially, who are living at home. But of course, there are, you know, habitual runaways. As a reporter, whenever I would see a news release come across my desk about a girl who has run away, and it's not her first time that she's run away, the first thing I would think was, how long is it going to be before a trafficker finds her? And it's not to say that she'll be exploited and then be missing for 2 or 3 years. Sometimes these girls return home and then return to their abuser, their trafficker, and back and forth and back and forth. And their parents or their guardians are none the wiser, don't realize what's going on. So I think it's a matter of educating the public about what this problem actually looks like. And then, you know, giving parents a fighting chance to be able to identify when something is amiss.
Yeah, I think, Ronell, that the majority of cases, the victim is female, the perpetrators, the customers are male. What percentage of it would be young boys taken advantage of, and what percentage might be women who are actually the perpetrators?
So as far as young boys, I know from the statistics that we have, it says about 3% of victims are boys, but I would say that because human trafficking in general is an underreported crime, and when it comes to boys and men, there's a lot more stigmatization around sexual violence, and so it's just not being reported. So we know that it's happening a lot more, but we just don't know for sure what the actual numbers are. And when it comes to as far as who the exploiters are, who the traffickers are, generally we do see it tends to be men, males who are doing the victimizing, but also it can be women, it can be a family member. And also a lot of times traffickers will have one of their victims, so one of the girls that they're exploiting, take on the role as an exploiter. So she'll have that role as now to recruit new girls, to bring in other girls, because they'll understand that for a young woman, she may be less sort of apprehensive or nervous to meet with or hang out with another female, not really knowing that that girl's actually there as a recruiter to bring more girls to the trafficker.
Why would these girls do that?
Well, they're manipulated. They've often been victimized themselves. A lot of times these girls and young women are in love, or they think they're in love with their trafficker, and they think that their trafficker loves them. They see it more as a boyfriend-girlfriend type relationship where they're working towards some ultimate goal. Like, you know, you just keep working in the strip club a little while longer and we'll be able to buy that condo, or we'll be able to get away, or we'll be able to take that vacation. You know, they're filled with lies and manipulation. And also, you know, these traffickers play off of their emotions. This is something I actually get into in my book. Roxanne, the protagonist, comes across a girl who the reader realizes is trying to kind of recruit her to bump her from her one trafficker and move her over to another trafficker. And I've talked to a lot of police officers and frontline service providers who have met victims who have later been charged, and then they try to get their record wiped clean later once, you know, the justice system comes around to realizing that they were actually victimized. They've realized their victimization, and that's why they were perpetrating these acts.
Good morning. I'm Jerry Yeager. Welcome to News Talk 1010. Story that has not been profiled enough, I think, and so I'm trying to do it here from time to time on the show, is the story of human trafficking, sex slavery of children, essentially, here in the GTA. Never mind what you hear about these issues around the world. It's happening right here. And joining me to talk about it, Tamara Cherry of Pickup Communications and the author of a book on this issue called All the Bumpy Pebbles, and Ronell Bruder of Project I Rise, working to help people who are victims move into a better and more functional life. And Ronell, we're going to talk about myths. And let's start with this one. Somehow during the summer, this myth started up that Wayfair was selling children online. How did that happen?
Yeah, so that began with a fairly well-known activist was tweeting that Wayfair, they were selling very high-priced storage cabinets, and that these were listed under the names of children that were similar to some names on a missing children's database. And so people began to speculate that Wayfair was actually not selling these high-priced cabinets, but actually selling children as part of an international child sex trafficking ring.
I don't know, Tamara, do you think people fall for this story?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really easy to fall for these sorts of stories, especially when you don't know what human trafficking actually looks like. I remember the first human trafficking story I did when I was working at the Toronto Sun was about an international human trafficking case. And when the news release came in from Toronto Police, I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, oh my God, human trafficking, that's something that happens in other countries. It doesn't happen in Canada. And I thought it would involve, you know, somebody coming in over in a boxcar from China. I couldn't believe it. So, and that was me working as a journalist, a crime reporter for several years. By that point. But then once I became educated on it, what sex trafficking looks like, and by and large, it's domestic sex trafficking in Canada, I began to see signs of it everywhere. So people that aren't educated on what it looks like would be, you know, pretty gullible to fall for these things.
Okay, but right now I look at a story like that. I knew about this story, and I look at it and go, well, that's just stupid, and nobody would believe it. So is there any actual harm done here to what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's actually a lot of danger with these types of stories and these myths being perpetuated. And I look at it from the side of both victims and survivors. So as a victim of trafficking, if you're hearing these type of stories, and this is what trafficking looks like, and this is what people are talking about, you're not going to recognize yourself as a victim, because your story most likely will not in any way relate to that. Because as Tamara was saying, domestic sex trafficking isn't someone being kidnapped or hidden away or chained somewhere. And so victims oftentimes aren't able to recognize their own victimization. And for someone who's a survivor, they hear these stories, they begin to internalize this, and they think to themselves, well, that wasn't my story. My experience wasn't as horrific or as dangerous as that. So maybe I don't deserve the same level of empathy or concern or services, because my trafficking wasn't what I'm seeing or what I'm hearing or what people are talking about. So I think there is a lot of danger as far as for victims and survivors, because they're also listening and hearing and potentially believing these myths.
Okay.
And not only that, I mean, when you look at I was reading something earlier today about the Polaris Project, which operates the U.S. National Human Trafficking Hotline, and they pointed out that when hundreds of thousands of people are sharing the same misinformation, that means very long wait times for victims who are in crisis and are calling to get information, because all these other people are calling in thinking, you know, my neighbor just ordered this cabinet, but I actually think it's a child that's been trafficked from, you know, wherever. So when we're distracting from the real issues, there is real harm that can be done.
But what do we want people to know, need people to know about what trafficking looks like? Because I got a little girl living across the street. I don't pay attention to her. I mean, so I don't know what's going on.
Well, I think once you know what trafficking looks like, I would say, you know, educate yourself on that, and then you begin to see the signs. Once I started reporting on domestic sex trafficking of women and girls, I would see vulnerable girls everywhere. And it's not just homeless girls, it's not just the runaways, it's there people that are vulnerable in different ways. I think also people need to know that the villains or the bad guys of sex trafficking aren't necessarily these big secretive corporations, but it could be a local businessman, it could be a young man who appears to be out with his girlfriend, it could be a doctor, it could be an engineer. I did a story on an engineer once who was looking for sex with a 14-year-old girl. So people need to just change the lens through which they...
Oh, okay, but I'm going to stop you tomorrow so don't run out of time. I don't know what a vulnerable girl looks like.
Read my book. And I think you'll see it everywhere.
You think it's that simple, Ronell?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, as far as what is vulnerability, I mean, every young person is vulnerable to some degree, whether you're homeless or whether you're living in a stable home, because young people are dealing with so many issues, body image issues, parents, school, bullying, so many things like that. And really trafficking, I think the most important thing people should understand about trafficking is it's really a crime of psychological and emotional manipulation and coercion. So there is elements of violence, and there's the fear, and there's all those other elements. But what really keeps the victims there oftentimes is that psychological manipulation and that bond. And because that's hard for us to actually see, it's sometimes hard to notice when it's happening. And this is why it's so important. And Tamara, you pointed it out, to educate yourself on trafficking, educate your children. There's so many resources. The Canadian Center to End Human Trafficking has tons of resources. Myself, read Tamara's book. Find out what it actually looks like, and then talk to your children. Have this conversation as an ongoing conversation with your children about what trafficking looks like, so they can be empowered and help keep them safe.
Well, it occurs to me as a parent, my kids are older now, but Tamara, one of the things is you've got an 11, 12, 13-year-old girl. You should have her involved in enough things, and you're involved enough that you actually know where she is all the time.
Yeah, but not all parents have the opportunity to do that. You know, I've met a lot of single moms over the years who have been struggling to make ends meet with two or three part-time jobs, and their kids end up getting killed. Their kids have gotten into gangs, and they didn't realize it because they weren't home to properly supervise them. So I'm not saying this is always the case with these girls, but I remember what it was like to be a 14-year-old girl and want nothing more than for a boy to pay attention to me. And I sometimes think about what would have happened if a young, charismatic pimp turned trafficker would have approached me outside of a Burger King over the lunch hour. You know, there's so many situations that can turn people who are otherwise from very good homes into very vulnerable prey for these traffickers. So I think it's a lot more complicated than just, you know, putting your kids in multiple activities.
I'm sure we'll talk again. Tamara Cherry of Pickup Communications is the author of All the Bumpy Pebbles, a book on this issue that we've been discussing, and Rennell Bruder of Project I Rise. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.